HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Welcome to Citizens for Health Radio. This is Jim Turner. I'm board chair of Citizens for Health, an attorney in Washington, D.C. And we're talking today to Joseph Sandry, who's founder and CEO of a couple of companies that are of great significance. Thought Delivery Systems is his current company, and they are doing some very interesting innovations. He's been the president of Fiber Tower and other telecommunication companies in Washington, D.C., and also has involvement with the Spectrum Management Association, of which he's now the president, and also works with Ancient Tree Archives. And all of this fits together under our topic for today, which is the idea of frequencies, health, and 5G. Joe, welcome to be with us. First of all, did I do justice to you with the introduction? And are there things you also want to indicate, you know, suggest as also background that you've been working with?
There are other things, but no, I'd love to just get straight to the issues. But, yeah, three decades in the telecommunication industry with both a legal background and a technical background.
So how about starting with an overview from you of where you see, how you see 5G wireless fitting into what's going on and what kinds of challenges it poses, and a quick summary of what kind of alternative there might be.
Sure. 5G is definitely here, and what I mean here, not just in the United States, but globally. Its promise, for folks who aren't aware of its promises, you'll eventually get, or you will get, if you're using 5G and you're using a smartphone, you'll get up to a gigabit of connectivity to your hand, which is the equivalent of many office buildings even 5 years ago or so. Even some office buildings even had less than a full gigabit. So you'll have that in your hands. And you'll have what's called low latency, which means the quality signal will have extremely few blips or problems with it. And so the fidelity will be so high, it'll be like when you went into a building to broadcast from a TV studio or make movies or have high fidelity, you know, government connections. You know, think of leaders of state or military. All that will be in your hands. So that's the promise, and there's no lack of advertising and go rah rah information about how good that will supposedly be for everyone. That said, and there's a tremendous amount of funding, both government undergirded funding and private funding, to roll this out, you know, globally. So that's where it's going in terms of geography. What does it mean for humans and other life forms? That's a whole other story, and that's not been studied. And many federal agencies have either understudied it or not studied it at all. And most of our federal agencies have a statutory mission. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, or the Department of Defense, or the Federal Communications Commission, or you name it, they all have a underlying reason to exist, and that reason to exist is always tethered to some public interest. And because 5G is going to be impacting all of those public interest foundations of each of those federal agencies, they all have some role to play in understanding whether or not 5G is going to have a helpful or harmful or both type of impact on folks. But if you ask me, Jim, what I see, that's how I see it rolling out. We could get into the issues related to any particular federal or international or state or local agency or person or organization.
Well, let me ask you the other side of the question. You've given the promise. What is the potential cost, and what are we facing as the downside of this promise?
Well, at the risk of quoting a former Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, there's the known knowns, and then the known unknowns, and then the unknown unknowns. there's a lot of information out there that it would normally be studied before you roll out such a large scale, global scale experiment. And what is that? What do I mean by that? So, for example, when leaded gasoline was rolled out, or when smoking was promoted as good for you, or a lot of things, you know, asbestos was used in shingles and in walls throughout the world. All those things had great promise, and there's a lot of things that had great promise that didn't have the downside of the things I just mentioned, of course. But you know, you often want to study something in some detail before you roll it out in large scale. And there are some interesting things here where, with comprehensive wireless versus, let's say, comprehensive or majority wireline, when you start moving from fiber optic predominant world to a predominant wireless world, there's different energy levels at play in that make that phone or that wireless system work when untethered to a line. And what does that mean? Well, for one, we do know that a close look at the largest mobile wireless systems out there, the phone manufacturers, and a lot of the big mobile wireless companies, they have to reveal, because they're publicly traded, most of them, they have to reveal whether or not they have insurance against harmful interference to people, material harms caused to people. And from what I can tell from all their latest filings, and I may have missed something, but from what I can tell, none of them are insured against material harm to human beings, let alone material harm to, let's say, honeybees, and we all need honey, we need bees for propagation of crops, let alone other living things. And there's no insurance against catastrophic harms to those living entities, including humans, children, adults, the whole bit. And that's kind of puzzling. This is a $12 trillion industry, according to McKinsey, the 5G industry and its outgrowths, $12 trillion with a T, dollars, big number.
That's over half of the GNP, isn't it, or GDP?
It's a massive amount, and GNP and GDP are all always moving, but I've seen different takes on it. Telecom or healthcare or switch often, or big tech and healthcare switch about who is the biggest industry. But and there's some overlaps too. There's plenty of telecom used by healthcare and things like that. But the big takeaway there, Jim, is that they're not insured, and that's a big head scratcher. You'd think if I was a big insurance executive, I'd want these would be blue chip accounts. They'd be top drawer accounts. They'd pay handsomely, and I would want them paying me to insure them. However, if you're not pushing hard to have that type of insurance against catastrophic health effects, and you're a big insurance executive, why aren't you pushing hard? Why is that? Maybe it's because our big federal agencies, let's say EPA or some other ones, have been underfunded or zeroed out for their funding to study these issues, and they're not going to take a flyer on it. They're not going to risk their whole organization's collateral on something that there's not enough data about. So that's a major concern. That's a red light that's beeping every morning. I come from industry, and I do think these issues should be really carefully looked at. And I think there's plenty of ways to do things in a healthy way and get broadband. I'm a person who builds broadband. I like the idea of people having access, but I don't like the idea of things being.
Well, let's look at that for a minute. What way would there be to get the benefits that you outlined at the beginning and minimize, if not eliminate, all of the risks that you've been describing since laying out the benefits? What's the alternative plan? How can we approach it?
Yeah, so practically speaking, think of it as let's start with a stool, a three-legged stool. Well, the one thing is you do want to do the studies. You want to measure what is the energy level in your house or by your head when you're looking at your phone or your iPad, or your children are doing the same, and with the routers in your house, and the 5G base stations that are put up at 10 feet above the ground on poles right outside of somebody's condominium, blasting into their you know, a good strong signal into their living room or their bedrooms. So you want to know what is the, you know, what are those levels and what are those impacts? You want to measure at a cellular level and a microcellular level up to other levels. What are those impacts? And the FCC has purportedly been measuring that for years, and they've kept a 1980s version standard largely in place. And that's the subject of many cases, including one I'm an amicus on, the Environmental Health Trust and Consumers for Safe Cell Phones and Children's Health Defense petitioners against the Federal Communications Commission because they want more studies and they want more information. So there's that level, and there's another level on that leg of the stool, which is actual measurement. The industry, the telecom industry, for decades and decades, has built very sophisticated methods, spectrum management methods, for understanding if, let's say, a particular satellite system is interfering into a particular terrestrial system or vice versa, or one terrestrial system into another terrestrial system or vice versa. And there's incredibly sophisticated spectrum analyzers and methods for understanding how much energy is going in it into one network versus another. And it's about time we understood how much energy is going into one, you know, a human or another, you know, from those systems as well. Because we are electrical systems, which is the second leg of the stool. Anyone who's taken a biology 101 course in college or AP biology in high school or even, you know, regular biology knows that human beings are electrical. Actually, every living thing on planet Earth is electrical. We have an electrical charge to us. And that directly translates to the fact that we do have, literally, we emit energy on different channels, just like the channels on your car radio or you know, people who used to watch TV channels instead of through cable, you know, broadcast channels. There are channels that your smartphones operate on. Even though you don't know, you're not, you know, they don't give you a dial on which channels to dial into, but they for surely are, for sure are many multiple channels that your smartphones operate on. And the same thing for living things. We have channels that we emit energy on and energy comes to us on at different cellular levels. And you can think of your eyes, you can think of your skin cells, and they're all different. Your skin cells are different than your optical cells. And that's the same for children who have much thinner skulls, much thinner skin, and wireless can permeate further into their skulls than it can a full-grown human. And same thing for your pets or for your tomato plants in your garden on the summer day, or that beehive that might be supplying honey or, you know, propagating plants. Those bees have different sensitivities than a human would, and on and on and on. And some of this has been quite well measured on it's peer-reviewed scientific studies, both in the U.S. and internationally. But it's been way underfunded from our academic institutions, from our federal government. Other federal governments and other academic institutions are doing some studies, and there's a great body of knowledge, but it needs much more focus in measurement. And then, and going back to these precise systems where one network will measure interference from another network and vice versa, those sophisticated systems need to be brought to bear in understanding interference into the living things on this planet.
So let me just clarify. As I understand it, you've got these frequencies that are out there impacting with all living entities as well as all non-living entities, but they're out there impacting, and the FCC has limited itself to looking at the amount of heat they create to determine whether they're safe or not, but they've not looked at the actual frequencies themselves and what kind of biological damage they might cause. Is that a fair summary of what you're saying there?
Yeah, and to be even a little more stark about it, the FCC has never published what channels human beings operate on. The FCC has not published what channels honeybees operate on. The FCC has not studied, you know, those are things I think the public would want to know, the impact of wireless, you know, their smartphones or anything else on those living things. And also, you know, the other thing that's kind of concerning is smartphones themselves also have manuals in them. In the manuals, when you used to buy one, you'd get a paper manual, but now you have to find the manual buried in your smartphone. And the manuals so far, as far as I'm aware, and again, I've looked at this pretty carefully, and so far typically have statements in them that say, Jim, don't hold this phone to your head. Jim, don't put this phone in your pocket while it's on, at least not on, on regular mode, especially if you're wearing, you know, tight clothes or yoga pants or whatever else. Not that you're wearing yoga pants, Jim, but you know, you get me, right? So the point being, they literally tell you it's they're basically saying it's unsafe to operate this phone holding it to your head. It's unsafe to operate this phone in your keeping it on in your pocket. Well, that's not realistic. That's like buying a chair, and then you go to clean your floor and you see under the chair, don't sit on this chair. It might collapse at any time, or it's, you know, there's chemicals on it that'll burn your skin or whatever. You know, that's insane. You know, chairs are meant to be sat on. Phones are meant to be put in your pocket and held to your head. That's how they're designed. And the fact that they're telling you in their manual, don't do that, is another area of grave concern.
Well, not only that, but then you don't even know that it's there.
Right.
And efforts that have been tried to create something at the point of purchase so that you'll know before you buy the phone that those things exist have all been blocked by the telecommunications industry stepping in and suing the jurisdictions that have tried to make those kinds of rules and saying they should not, the public should not have access to that information other than what's in their cell phone.
Yeah.
Also, I understand they tried to object to having it in their cell phone, too. When they were first put out, but I just put that on the table for the moment.
Yeah. Well, you would think it would be like the labels on your food, so you know if you're eating something that's, you know, you're not going to eat a pure block of salt.
Or that you're allergic to,
you know. Or what you're allergic to, that's right. And it
may be that
labels.
Some people will be told, you know, stay away, keep getting low EMF inputs. But let me ask you this. Suppose we go to Wired, we save ourselves a lot of that EMF pollution, so to speak, but do we lose a lot of the benefits that you outlined at the beginning of the program if we were to go to essentially all or nearly all Wired?
No. I mean, there to be sure will be some areas where you're not going to get broadband when you're at the top of your mountain hike or something like that without Wired. But that said, you know, most meaningfully useful broadband related activities in homes and places of business can be accomplished by wire. And I say most because, in fact, on December 7th, the FCC announced who won something called the RDOF, the Rural Development Opportunity Fund auctions, where they gave out $9 billion. They'll be giving out another 13 billion more in later phases, and they awarded a vast amount of these. Again, this is rural development funds to companies, wireline companies. One's called LTT Broadband, that was the biggest winner, and they're building predominantly wireline. 90%+ of their system is wireline by their design as filed, and there's many others like that out there. And so the code has been cracked. You can get fiber to homes in rural America, so you don't need to be predominantly radiating cities and countrysides. So that's one of the issues, Jim. Now, to be sure, it might be really hard to get across a certain mountain range or through over a particular river. And it might make much more sense to put a very directed, very low exposure, extremely low exposure wireless fiber link, which is way different than the omnidirectional systems that broadcast everywhere. It'd be like essentially a wireless fiber. It'd be an invisible wire, essentially, way above the bridge, shooting from the top of one tower and top of another tower, that kind of thing, and not really having the measurable effects that the big omnidirectional or area-wide broadcasting type of systems have. So those are ways to really mitigate and still deliver the broadband promise to homes, to offices, to places of work, worship, entertainment, whatever. So hopefully that's a useful answer for you.
Well, that's very clarifying. I now need to take a break, but what I'd like to say is that we're going to come back and talk about trees. We're talking, this is the Citizens for Health radio program, and we're talking to Jay Sundry, who's been involved in the telecommunications industry for years, president of the of a couple of very important telecommunication initiatives, and we're discussing all the pros and cons of a wired versus wireless EMF rollout, 5G rollout. And we'll be back in a minute to discuss the rest of that activity in the next couple of minutes. Thank you.
All positive natural health programs on HRNradio.com.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Turner, chairman of the board of Citizens for Health. This is Citizens for Health Radio. We're talking about 5G wireless versus wired today. We're talking with Joe Sundry, who's a telecommunications innovator working on new ideas for rolling out 5G. And we've been discussing some of the impacts of 5G on health and how we can get most of the benefits, if not nearly all of the benefits of 5G, by using wired and bypass a number of the health problems. Now, Joe, there are also, besides the health problems, there are environmental problems that are that come with 5G. Maybe you could give us kind of a little summary of that and how it affects other life forms besides human beings.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. There are a growing array of studies that are way below the common radar, but you can still find them, you know, by searching on the internet. But one example is, and you'd mentioned, you know, I'm on the board of directors of the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive, and the Archangel Ancient Tree Archive's mission is to propagate, archive, and reforest with the old-growth genetics of our nation's and world's largest and oldest trees. We find the largest and oldest trees of each species and then take cuttings and reforest with saplings and seedlings derived from those cuttings and seeds. Because, you know, we're down to about 3% of the world's old-growth forests, and that's dwindling because of forest fires and everything else. Now, what's the impact of let's say, you know, the wireless rollouts on that? Well, the first impact is physical and direct. You need to deploy anywhere from 5 times to 20 times more poles and tower-based base stations than you did with the 4G. 4G's fourth generation wireless that was the latest wireless until 5G came. So again, anywhere from 5 to 20-fold more base stations need to be deployed. So that means all along your streets, you know, at tower, at light pole level and things like that, there will be many more systems deployed. And because those systems need to talk to each other from pole to pole, pole to tower, pole to rooftop, when there are trees in the way, they tend to degrade the signal. So what's happening, and there's all kinds of data out there and all kinds of images, that a lot of trees are being chopped along roadways and everywhere else. So there, that's a direct deforestation issue. And again, trees are our lungs, our planet's lungs. They filter the air, the soil, and the water. They provide habitat for our living things. They help mitigate climate swings. And, you know, they're homes. You know, they're homes for birds and all kinds of other, you know, mitochondria and animals. And when we lose that effect of trees by chopping them down, that's catastrophic on quite a few levels. Somewhere in the order of 25% of the world's energy is burned heating and cooling buildings, and you can mitigate, you know, whether it's your home or an office building, you can mitigate your heating and cooling costs by up to 25% or more by having a tree, trees near it or around it. So there's that impact, cutting them down directly when we have so few trees as it is. Two, the other impact is, from a wireless standpoint, there's plenty of studies that show that defoliation and other things occur when you have these towers broadcasting, these base stations broadcasting into the trees, if you haven't chopped them down. So there are impacts that have, through peer-reviewed studies that have been rolled out. So, you know, that's not that helpful to those life forms. And, you know, a whole other layer is then all the life forms that depend on these trees, which are also have, you know, direct RF impacts as measured by multiple studies. There's one study that showed, I think, around 900 megahertz, which is one of the original mobile wireless channels, that when beehives are within a certain distance, I think it's around 100 meters or so, that when a base station turns on the beehive, all the bees will vacate within around 30 minutes or so, never to return again. So it's called hive collapse. The bees in that hive will leave permanently. So what does that mean? Why are they so agitated by that signal that they literally leave their home? That's not something I'm sure they would have done without the base station operating. So that needs to be studied and validated. You know, that peer-reviewed study, is that a real-world example with real-world 5G, or is that an example that needs, you know, has some flaws in it? And so those are the kinds of things where professional spectrum managers can do deep work. And this type of study should be made available to the public at large, and our federal agencies, our academic institutions should be looking hard at this. And another thing about trees is that Yale completed a study of studies. Nearly 1,000 studies were reviewed, I think within the last year, and it showed that your mortality rate will decrease by about 12%, i.e. you'll live about 12% longer if you live around healthy forests, if you live or work amid healthy forests. So let alone the wireless impact, if you start degrading forests even further, then that's not useful at all. And these things are all tied together. I did do go ahead.
You told me that the trees are antennas themselves. How does that relate to this situation?
Yes, trees are antennas. This has been well known for decades in the scientific community, that every tree and every bush, the leaves on it literally move and align with our solar system. And I know that sounds kind of science fiction-y, but these are actual studies, and you can go to the New Jersey Institute of Technology and other places and understand in much more depth the fact that trees literally, very specifically, very precisely, the foliage align with the stars and the planets. Now, you know, what are the reasons behind that very predictable and very precise alignment? Is, you know, it's way understudied. It's catastrophically understudied. Meanwhile, we're building more and more systems that come between the trees and foliage and the planets. You know, for example, the world's first satellite, Sputnik, was launched in 1957. Up until about early this year, the amount of satellites that have been launched in the history of the world was about 8,500, and about 2,500 of them were actually operating earlier this year. You know, so since 1957 until 2020, there were about 2,500 satellites operating. Well, the Federal Communications Commission has approved the launch of and licensure of 10, 20, 30, 40,000 satellites for a variety of entities, and these same entities have applied for more. And they are launching right now. You have Elon Musk's satellite system. Kuiper is an Amazon-related, Jeff Bezos-related system. OneWeb is a United Kingdom, UK government system. All have these massive satellite licensure approvals and or applications in place. And so we're going to be occluding the skies with thousands, tens of thousands, historically, dramatically, exponentially larger groups of satellites. And you know, what is the impact of that? Not only on trees, but also on migrating birds, turtles, dolphins, on and on, butterflies.
But everything that might be a problem about wireless is multiplied by orders of magnitude when you start doing it from satellites. And it looks like they've already, generally, it looks like the FCC's approved about the potential. potential of about 1 million licenses for satellites, or that's for the Earth stations to receive satellites, but 100,000 satellites. We have to take another break here for a couple of minutes, and we're talking with Joe Sandry, who's an executive in the telecommunications industry and also a leader in preserving trees, and how those two ideas fit together and create something that we call a more holistic world. I'm Jim Turner. I'm an attorney in Washington, D.C., and board chair of Citizens for Health, and this is the Citizens for Health Radio Hour.
Timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Welcome back to the Citizens for Health Radio Hour. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., and board chair of Citizens for Health. And today we're talking to Joe Sandry, who's been involved in the telecommunications industry for years. He's the president of Thought Delivery Systems, working on how to create a more stable, safe, and friendly 5G system than the wired than the wireless system that we currently have. And Joe, you had just been starting to talk about the satellites. Why is the FCC the one that's saying how many satellites there would be should be, rather than some other agency that actually has some competence in the area of outer space?
That's a great question, and the FCC is acting in what a mutual friend of ours calls a supra-constitutional manner, and I think that's an apt description. And I've been involved in some filings from a group called the Balance Group, where Jim and some of our other colleagues have filed on this, and the issue is that if there is a dramatic impact, let's say, on the migration of butterflies or the impact on our forests, you think the Forestry Service or the Fish and Wildlife Service or one of those groups would have a say before these systems are operated. If there's also a very strong indicator that electromagnetic pulses from solar flares and things like that can take out satellite systems, there's space debris issues. So there's big national defense issues where you'd think the Department of Defense and Department of Homeland Security and others would be given a larger and bigger say on the deployment of these systems. And it doesn't appear on the surface that when these massive satellite systems applications come in, that the FCC is making a strong effort to to ask all our federal agencies, is there an issue of catastrophic health impacts? Is there an issue of catastrophic national defense impacts? Is there an issue of impacts on our livestock? You know, USDA might be interested. Our Environmental Protection Agency might have an interest. These are serious issues. And you know, to relate back to the tree discussion, and the impacts on trees. You know, I'd mentioned like the New Jersey Institute of Technology has done a lot of studies about how trees track with the solar, with the planets and solar levels, very precisely. It's a Dr. Jay Capraff, a mathematics professor in New Jersey Institute of Technology, who's studied and written papers about the work of Lawrence Edwards, who was a Scottish scientist and who passed away in about 2004. But he's found conclusively that each species of tree has a two-week rhythm geared to the alignment of the Earth, the Moon, and one or more of the planets. This is not a hypothesis. This is actual fact. Another study, which was quite important, that showed that in the mid-1970s, that a growth rings of an 807-year-old juniper tree that was growing on a mountaintop more than 11,000 feet in altitude. The rings would show substantial slowing of growth during the 15 years following known supernovas, one in 1604, one in 1770, one in 1952. Then that study was tied to some researchers at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland, and found that the single biggest predictor of tree ring growth, in in like 50-year-old Sitka spruce trees wasn't precipitation or temperature, but galactic cosmic rays, or what are called GCRs. So in the years when the most galactic cosmic rays were bombarding the Earth, the trees grew faster. And
basically, what you're saying is that there's a kind of an electromagnetic system that all life participates in, and we've come up with this intervention through 5G that kind of wants to take advantage of the frequencies, but has not actually thought through how it fits into the overall system that already exists. Is that a fair summary of what we're dealing with here?
Yeah, I mean, I think our medical community and National Institutes of Health need to study this thoroughly. Our environmental expert agencies and academic institutions, all of them. Well, the interconnectivity is not being studied.
Now, that's a set of problems, but in addition to that, aren't there some national security problems? Don't we have hacking as a possibility from wireless that might be less of a problem under with a wired system?
That's correct. And, if you think about it, whether it's a satellite wireless or a mobile wireless, they're designed to be accessible from anywhere. So there's that physical fact. Then the other physical fact is, a lot of the newer high-density satellite systems that are being launched as we speak are designed to be maneuverable. If the North Koreans launch a missile at them and they blow them to pieces, those pieces will move around the planet at, the Earth turns at around 18,000 miles an hour, so you'll have pieces spinning at 18,000 miles an hour. It's been well documented that space debris or space junk like that, a bolt the size of your pinky can rip through another satellite and disable it or destroy it. And then you have this domino effect where they go out of service and they smash into other ones, and then all of a sudden you have a catastrophic failure. And if all our most important national defense systems are operating through a dense satellite network, that's not good, right? We file that under bad. So, are we studying this? And there's a lack of detailed, serious study on these issues. And again, health.
Basically, what I hear you saying is that there is actually no focal point where all of the implications of 5G wireless are looked at by anybody who has the responsibility for integrating all of the new wireless systems with all of the already existent natural realities, natural EMF, natural structures, and so forth. And so no one is integrating all of that, and no one is actually looking at the impacts of the man-made system on the natural systems that exist. So we're kind of flying blind into what is being sold to us as a very, very positive future without coming up with the best way to go to minimize that, to minimize the dangers and the cost of that.
Yeah, we really could use a much more holistic look at this. The FCC is not a healthcare agency. It's not really pushing hard with real ardent curiosity to understand what our best academic and federal and state and international healthcare institutions have to say on the subject. They'll say, well, we put out a public notice and they should have known to file reams of information. Well, no, the more responsible way to do this would be to really push for funded, detailed, peer-reviewable studies that are transparent. And to seriously ask, the FCC officials seriously ask the heads of those other federal and state and international agencies and institutions, and to give them help. I don't want to bash the FCC because the FCC's got a very limited budget. It's one of the smallest agencies out there. So there's a need to I think just for everyone to be giving resources to all the entities.
What I understand here is we've got a very serious problem. We've got a potential answer that ought to at least be evaluated, and we've got to find a place to do that. That kind of a summary of our overall problem, as I see it. Joe, is that a fair summary of the situation?
It is. Much more study needs to be done, and absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we're going to take another break here, and then I'm going to come back with a little commentary on what we've heard today. And Joe Sandry, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Joe Sandry is the president of Thought Delivery Systems, working with some very significant inputs into the unfolding telecommunication policy that's going on around the world today. And this is Citizens for Health Radio. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., and board chair of Citizens for Health. We'll be back shortly with commentary.
Inspiration and motivation is just a podcast away at hrnradio.com.
Welcome back to the Citizens for Health Radio Hour. I'm Jim Turner, attorney in Washington, D.C., and board chair of Citizens for Health. And we present these radio interviews and comments as a way of integrating some of the health issues that we face to big policy activities underway across the country and around the world. And today we talked about one of the biggest, most ubiquitous, and most highly touted, and that is the arrival of so-called 5G. And there are a number of things about it that are very significant, and we heard a good deal about it from Joe Sandry early in the program. The issue that we're facing here, it's interesting, 5G is actually a PR name. It's something made up by a PR program to give people a sense that there's something going on that is somehow a big step in some kind of direction. The reality is that 5G is essentially 4G with some add-on. The add-ons aren't very clear. They're shorter frequencies. It's not been the policy of the United States Federal Communications Commission, which regulates this area, to look at the frequency problems that may be, or frequency effects that may come from the thing called 5G. That means the fifth generation of the basically EMF, the fifth generation of frequency communications or frequency uses. There are also now beginning to tout 6th, 7th, and 8th G are starting to show up in the PR world. The problem we're facing here is that the so-called 5G wireless is creating a field of really undisciplined communication. Basically, small pieces of information are put out electronically, and then they're basically put through the environment and picked up at the other end by a receiver and reorganized and put back together as messages. This could all be done by a combination of wired from, and we would say there's a project called SafeG, which Citizens for Health is a part of. And SafeG is basic premise is wired to the premises. That would be to the office and the home. You can get probably something like 90% of the benefits of 5G by wireless 5G by using wired 5G to the premises. The difference between the two can easily be made up by coherent wireless, which would be it's a laser-like communication. So if you're in an area where you can't communicate because there are mountains in the way or there's some kind of problem in the way, you can't cut through it, you can't create a trench and put it through it because of a mountain perhaps, you can use the focused, coherent Wi-Fi, which would allow you to have a disciplined set of information flowing in a direct light type source. We go from one point to another. And that combination gets you all of the benefits of 5G wireless without virtually any, and we would go so far as to say without any, except that never say without any, but with virtually none of the side effects that come from a wireless 5G system. The main problem is that it takes time and energy, effort, and money to put a wired system in place. All across the country, through the 90s and somewhat in the 2000s, ratepayers of utility companies were charged a fee, as they were public utilities, and they were charged a fee, the ratepayers,
to build out the wired network that we're arguing should be the backbone of any kind of future development of communication. That money that was charged under the law, was the legally adopted fee to build out the wireless program, the wired program, excuse me. The companies doing that, many of them were purchased by wireless companies, and the money was diverted into laying out the wireless program. The underlying reason for that is that it's quicker and faster to a profit using the wireless system. The problem we're addressing here is that there are many, many benefits to come from a fast, widespread, easy-to-use communication system. It has enormous benefits for improving life. The problem that we have in the culture is the tendency to want to make something like that have its primary validity by how much money it makes for its owners. And unfortunately, that leads us in the direction of making short-term decisions that have enormous long-term costs. Let's just go back to something that Joe was talking about to illustrate the point. Joe talked about trees. President Trump just signed a bill within the last month or so, not too long ago, might have been a little longer than that, to plant a trillion trees around the world. He joined the trillion tree planting system. The idea that planting trees is a very, very important thing to do is not controversial. It's widespread. It's very important. Joe's point is that we should plant ancient trees. We should, and the archive that he works with takes the DNA from old trees, trees that are maybe 500 to 1,000 years old, takes their DNA, replicates them, and plants them. One was planted in 2014 out in front of the Library of Medicine at the new National Institute of Health with major leaders from the health world. And it was a tree that was the one that Hippocrates was supposed to have taught under. And that NIH had a tree there like that from 1961 until last year. I think it was last year or maybe the year before, and it unfortunately got sick and they couldn't save it. So they replaced it with a new tree cloned from the DNA of the original tree. But Joe's point is, if we're going to plant a trillion trees, we should plant trees that live for a long time rather than trees that live for only 10, 15, or 20 years. And unfortunately, a good deal of the trillion tree planting project around this country and other places in the world is planting these short-term trees. That's an illustration of the argument or the observation that we put an enormous amount of our resources into short-term solutions or short-term movements forward, such as Wi-Fi, to the detriment of the long-term creation of a stable, sustained, healthy, and protective 5G program, which would be wired to the premises, coherent Wi-Fi where necessary, and fixing up the internal part of your home or office with various kinds of remediation in case some people end up using Wi-Fi in the house, which could be a part of this whole program. Now, you put all that together, and you have a completely different public policy framework to move forward. Unfortunately, there's no place in the federal government to address that question. So that's the big issue that we're having to address. And we're hoping that this helps people understand that when they see 5G, engage your intelligence and think it through and recognize wired 5G, and we call it safe G, is the policy you should follow. And, you know, keep that in mind whenever you get a chance to come in on it. I'm Jim Turner, a lawyer in Washington, D.C., chairman of the board of Citizens for Health, and this has been the Citizens for Health Radio Hour. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.